Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because I'm joined by the only person I can be joined for during this state of quarantine. I'm very fortunate that I'm trapped in the house with my favorite person, Erica Bromley.
Hi.
Hi.
So wait, I'm the only person you could record with in person right now.
Correct.
Right.
It just worked out.
So are you saying that you chose me only because I was your only choice?
No. That's not what I'm saying at all.
I know.
But we're very fortunate that we can still record a podcast together in person
because
we're stuck here together.
Right. I can touch you.
You can. And are.
Now I am.
We're holding hands across the table, everyone.
We
hope everybody is staying safe, staying healthy,
Shelter in place.
Sheltered in place here in Illinois. We're in a state of statewide lockdown, basically.
I guess that's what they call it, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some other states are doing it, but I don't know which ones.
My guess is that almost everybody would be at that point by now, but I don't know if that's
I have
for
no
sure.
idea. Yeah.
I know Indiana now is, and Wisconsin, and
You're better informed
New York
than me.
And California, because I am a news reader.
That's true.
And I have always loved journalism in general.
Correct.
As a thing. I like to be informed.
Concept, right? Yes, you do.
And I like the, you know, I'm obsessed with movies that take place in newsrooms.
That's right.
That's
why you
God.
Loved that show, The Newsroom. Because you love Sorkin.
Could tone that down a little bit.
What are you talking about?
I mean, I enjoy watching it.
The slow motion montage with Coldplay playing as they hand off the story.
No.
We got it right.
Oh my gosh.
We're the only ones that got it right. With the benefit of hindsight.
I remember that there were people who really loved that show.
Which is fine.
Of course. Some of our listeners, I'm sure. But I remember a few people who had just never watched a show before.
All right.
I'm kidding. No, but they were excited to see some of the things that they agreed with in television form.
Sure.
And I think that is really exciting for, you know, we're all at different places and levels with what we consume. So it is fun to see like something that you really feel and agree with on screen in any way. But like when you've seen it done before in other, properties, whatever, shows, whatever, it doesn't feel like as new and exciting.
Or when they do it in such a way that it makes you hate that you agree with it.
Right. Yes. But can we go back though? I love movies that take
place.
Sorry
about
that.
Newsroom
tangent.
I love
movies about journalists.
Correct.
Especially, specifically to like
I love Trouble with Julia Roberts and Nick Nolte.
I forgot
the Hepburn
that movie.
And Tracy of our day.
Oh my
gosh. It's a great journalism movie.
Did that movie do well?
No.
I didn't think so.
That was during the dark period for Julia Roberts.
Yeah. That's okay. She came out of it okay.
She's doing fine.
She survived. What about Nolte?
Nolte's doing fine.
Is he?
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Okay. Have you talked to him lately?
He doesn't return my calls.
Why?
Shelter
in place. But hey, he could FaceTime you.
That's true.
Okay. We've been doing some FaceTiming lately, which is something.
I have not been doing
FaceTiming.
Yeah,
no, you put your face in for like a minute. Not even a minute, a second.
Yeah.
Your beard was just too much. Everybody couldn't handle it.
That's
so you had to excuse yourself.
A theory. That's a theory.
You know, speaking of beards, are you going to be shaving?
Speaking of beards, here's my wife, Erica.
Are you going to be shaving or trimming that beard at all during the lockdown? Or are you going to do like some sort of lockdown beard?
I'll be honest
with
you. I have given it 0 seconds of thought.
I knew that
because
was your
why
answer
would I?
Before I asked you.
Why would I have even considered any of that?
Right. Well, I'm asking you now to consider it.
I will consider.
You always cut your own hair and trim your own beard. You do all that stuff for yourself.
Right.
Yeah. Our kids kind of need haircuts. I could probably use a haircut. These things are not going to
happen. I do not feel comfortable.
Can you cut my hair?
Cutting anyone's hair.
You cut your own hair.
Yeah. No, that's different.
Can you give me a trim?
Sure.
Layers?
I can absolutely give you an updo.
An updo?
That's a thing,
okay,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
That's what girls get
in the 90s.
For prom.
Uh-huh. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are we talking about? We're talking about The Firm this week.
There were some updos in The Firm, I believe.
Probably.
Yeah.
There's some real 90s clothes going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's a real, which is code for Friends, everyone, because Tom Cruise is dressed like Ms. Chenandler Bong for a lot of the movie. So we're going to talk about The Firm. But first, Bew, have you seen anything good lately?
Have I? Does it have to be good?
No, have you seen anything lately? Yeah, I always ask if you've seen anything good, but it doesn't have to be. It never has to be good.
We have seen so many things. So how far do we go back?
As far back as you want.
No, I mean, I think you've already talked on the podcast about how we've been watching a bunch of stuff with our kids.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome and fun, and they have liked pretty much everything.
They're kids. What do they know?
Yeah. Well, no, but it means cute to see, like, Charlie especially really loving things and adding them to his best of his favorites, his favorites, his favorites list, I should say. Yeah.
What's some of the stuff we watched with them?
Rosie. Well, we watched National Treasure. I think you talked about that already.
I think
on
so,
the show.
Yeah.
We watched Galaxy Quest, which was super fun.
Yeah. Talked about that.
Yeah. So you covered this. Okay. Did you talk? We watched Sky High with the
All
kids.
Right.
That was really fun. That movie's great. I remember seeing it back in, when did that come out? Like
2005?
Okay.
Would be my guess. I had such low expectations. That was one of those that we went to see because it fit into, like,
we're seeing a movie at noon.
We're seeing four
and
movies,
at,
right?
Yeah.
And this one happens to fit at 2 o'clock, so, and it's new and we haven't seen it.
Right.
So I went in with no expectations whatsoever. I could not have cared less about anything with that movie, and it was such a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
It's very, very entertaining and adorable. And Kurt Russell. I forgot he was in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because
really
I just haven't thought about it in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. So great. And the kids like that. What else did we watch? We put on Bring It On because Rosie very recently has been all of a sudden, I don't even know. I think it's from that Zombies movie or Zombies 2 on
Zombies
Disney.
2, yeah.
Zombies 2. You're very familiar.
Of course.
Yes. Zombies 2
Anything
on
with the word
Disney?
Zombie, I'm into.
Okay. Yeah.
That song by the Cranberries. Love it.
Zombie.
R.I.P. Dolores O'Riordan.
Oh, yeah. Rosie loves Zombies 2 on Disney. And so I think mm-hmm. that made her catch an interest in cheerleading all of a sudden.
Yay.
And it was so, I don't know. I mean, Rosie, our daughter's really petite and very much the type of kid who likes to, like today, she was going from one room to the other. And she just had to make a stop and, like, parkour all over the couch and table. It was like, why did she go that way and do that? It's out
parkour.
Of the way. Anyway, she probably would love to, like, be flipped in the air and do those things, but we have not introduced that to her world anyway. Patrick put on Bring It On. She was not in a mood for a movie at that time. She was asking for family afternoon movie.
Right.
And then she kind of left the room.
Well, that was our second movie.
Oh, yeah.
So we had already watched Look Who's Talking.
Oh, yeah. Look Who's Talking was so fun.
Well, yeah. But, like, I just was thinking, like, well, they'll be amused by the talking baby. But
yeah.
Rosie was disappointed that the baby doesn't actually talk. Oh. They were just hearing his thoughts.
Charlie liked it
enough. Mm-hmm. He identified the voice of Bruce Willis.
Which was cute.
From Over the Hedge, which he had just watched like the day before. Another one of his favorite movies.
I know. He's seen that a bunch.
Kids don't have a frame of reference for, like, that baby has the voice of David Addison, like,
right.
as we did in the 1980s,
right.
where we're like, it's funny because it's Bruce Willis's voice. Kids have no frame of reference for
yeah.
that. So I thought...
But he was excited.
I thought they would like it. They were... I think they thought it was fine.
Charlie watched it, though. I mean, I think Charlie liked it. He just didn't
Rosie
stick
was
it.
Asking about the sperm in the beginning.
Oh,
she was like, what's that?
My gosh. And then...
It's a hard one to explain.
Well, I was all for it. I'm like, you know what, kids? You are missing out. Charlie literally missed out. His grade level was supposed to get the talk from the health educators at school last week. And since they did not have school, that has been postponed. And
so we showed him Look Who's Talking instead.
I was ready. I'm like, this is science, kids. This
we learned how George
and
Siegel
science.
And Kirstie Alley make a Scientology baby.
George Siegel. I mean.
That was my introduction to him
as mine a kid. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, mine too. And I always felt like, why does she like him so much? Why does she want to be with him? Why does she.
Really? Him?
Really? Him? Really? Even as a kid, though, I was like. Why does she want to do it with that guy?
Right, right.
Why does she want to do it?
I don't know. Do what?
Do the sex.
Oh, wow.
No, really. As a kid, though, I was... I don't know how old I was when I first saw this movie, but...
88?
Okay. Yeah, so no, like, I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I
Younger
just
than Charlie.
Didn't understand the appeal of him at all. So, yeah.
He's
but
wealthy.
I thought she was very... Beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Can we talk about Olympia Dukakis for a minute?
Let's.
She's so funny in this movie.
It's part of our spinoff podcast.
It should be.
Olympia Dupodcast.
Does that exist yet? Can we do it?
No.
Oh.
It would just be this and Moonstruck and Steel Magnolias.
We watched Moonstruck not too long ago. Steel Magnolias came up recently in something I was looking at as like, you should watch this. And I was like, should I?
I don't think I've ever seen it start to finish.
Are you serious?
I've seen it in pieces and probably the whole movie, but not in
should that be
more
your
than 20 years?
S pick for our shelf life
piece? Don't own it.
We don't own it.
And we can't buy it just to do for shelf life because that's cheating.
That's cheating. Right. I understand. I mean, there's a lot of the movies we've bought just for one reason.
What reason would that be?
We're going to show these at my birthday marathon.
Oh.
We're going to show these at Scary
Movie
Night.
Yeah, but then we have them.
Yeah, right. So for shelf life and then we'd have it forever.
Oh, that's true.
And we could cry when Julia Roberts has health issues.
Yeah, she dies from, like, diabetes. Why do you want me to watch that?
I don't. Okay, I take it all back. But her hair is so pretty.
Well, sure.
And my sixth-grade teacher, Mrs. Henry, who was so wonderful and nice and smart and really tall, told me that I sort of looked like Julia Roberts once, and I was like, my life is changed.
And then she said, have you seen I Love Trouble? I love journalism movies.
Even in sixth grade, I did. Olympia Dukakis is so funny.
Yeah.
I was laughing out loud at many lines in this movie that I probably didn't laugh out loud at as a kid. And it wasn't about like not getting it. It's just that as an adult, knowing who these actors are and understanding like the tone and everything a different way. I don't know. I thought she was so fun. Every time Kirstie Alley says, Ma!
Because like looking in a mirror.
I didn't know when I was growing up that you know, you're in a bubble. You don't know that everybody's different from you until a little bit older. And I thought everybody said, Ma, when they were calling their mom.
Turns out, no.
It was actually Doug who really
pointed it out
to me. I was in college. And I was like, oh, you don't do that? Okay. Anyway, she's so funny. They're great. What else?
Lucas Donnelly is really, great.
Yeah,
it's really funny.
Some really sweet moments, too. Like the conversation.
Heckerling is really good.
She's so funny when she's on the stationary bike talking about like her marriage with the dad, the husband, and Kirstie Alley's like, what? And I don't know. She's so funny. It's cute. And I can't believe, though, that a movie does open with this like inside the body, the sperm is coming.
Right. They had to like film that. They had to build that.
I know.
They had to build because it's not CG. They had to build a bunch of little like sperm puppets.
That is so great. Yeah. Where are those sperm puppets now?
In Amy Heckerling's house.
Are they on eBay? I want to buy a sperm
puppet.
Ooh,
maybe. Good Travolta, too, which I feel like...
Yes.
He had the early 80s, like, blowout, urban cowboy.
Yes.
And then this is, like, it for the 80s. I mean, he made lots of movies in the 80s, but this is the only time where it was like, hey, maybe John Travolta's back. And then...
He's handsome and sweet and believable and charming. And I even, again, as a kid, I was like, no, he's a nice guy. It's okay that he's not this big Wall Street type or whatever, you know. He really loves you. Pick the right guy.
She does.
Yeah, she does.
And then I remember I remember being excited to go see Look Who's Talking 2, which came out maybe the very next year or maybe 2 years. It might have been 1990. And it was one of those times where, like, again, I was probably around Charlie's age, maybe a little older. But I realized that, like, a movie was bad, you know?
Ah, okay.
There were a handful of those at that age. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was figuring that out pretty early. I remember as early as, like, Jewel of the Nile being like, wait a second, this isn't good.
Darn.
As a kid. Because I talked to other people, like Mike always talks about when he was a kid, he just loved everything because he had no discernment for good from bad. Mm-hmm. But Luke is talking too. I could tell, like Ghostbusters too. I was like, oh, this isn't good. This isn't like the first movie.
I feel
because, for the record, Ghostbusters 2 is not good.
I know. But let people like it if they want to.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Yes.
Absolutely.
Of course. Yes.
And people love it.
Yeah.
People absolutely love it. So.
What's the song again that plays Your Love Has Lifted Me?
Yeah.
Higher and Higher?
Yeah.
As they're like marching down the streets of
either
New York.
Either that or Bobby Brown's On Our Own.
Oh, I have really strong memories, good and bad, to On Our Own. But I used to listen to that song a lot.
I liked that song a lot. I was crazy excited for Ghostbusters 2, but I can't get into it.
That was a huge, wasn't that the summer of 89?
Yeah.
So same summer as Batman?
Yeah.
that was a really big summer in my house as well. I mean, I think probably anyone who loves movies, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we were...
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Lethal Weapon 2, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Roger and Me, all summer of 89.
I was getting
Roger
repeat
me,
viewings
huge
of Roger
deal
and
in
Me.
My house. I was doing all my Michael Moore cosplay.
Oh, yeah. I've seen pictures.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So what else? Okay. Look Who's Talking, and...
Oh, we started talking about Bring It On.
Just that you put it on. It was our second movie. Rosie leaves the room. She comes back during, like,
right
moments.
Away.
Right, right.
Because it opens with that cheer, and I
right.
could see her, like, hear it from the next
yes.
room and come running back into the room.
And she watches it, and she's really into it, and then the, you know, that part's over, and she leaves again.
Yeah.
And she was in and out the whole time, not really watching. It ends, and she's like, I want to watch that movie again. I really liked that. And like, you barely saw any of it.
Yeah.
But then I realized she just wants to keep seeing routines, like dancing. And because she loves dancing and singing. It's what she does around our house, like, for
right.
half the day.
Right.
But she wanted to see the cheer routines, too. But now she has asked about it. I don't know if you know this. She's asked me more than once, like, can we watch that cheerleading movie again? Since then.
I've just been showing her other Dunst movies.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. I think, can we watch Get Over It with them?
I mean, in theory, there's like a scene where they go to like a strip club or something.
Yeah.
Which.
That's why I want to watch it.
Was in another movie we just watched. Oh, we watched Dragnet with Charlie and they went to a strip club at one point. There's a lot of sex stuff in Dragnet that I forgot.
I love sex stuff.
I know you do. But yeah, Dragnet probably not totally age appropriate.
No.
But,
okay. We also watched The Black Cauldron with the kids, which
yes.
they also enjoyed. Rosie, I asked her who her favorite character was, and of course she said the princess. she's very pro-female. Like, she always likes the female characters. It doesn't
right.
matter. They don't have to be a princess. This isn't a princess thing. She's not, like, obsessed with princesses necessarily, right? She just loves the main female character, and she's very... Is there a girl in it? Like, she always wants to be supporting the women.
Even on Lego Masters, her favorite contestants were the two girls.
Yeah.
Just because they were the two girls.
Right, right. Anything else that we watched with
cosplay?
Them? Yeah.
No, we can switch to the ones that you and I have watched.
Okay.
We watched a couple of big ones.
Oh my gosh, so many. So you've talked about things on other podcasts, though, right? Like you Skyped
yeah, well,
with
Amherst like,
last week, so I don't want to repeat that stuff. Okay,
that
what else?
We should talk about.
Okay.
Two we were able to watch because of this whole quarantine situation. And
The
then,
Hunt?
Yeah, that's one of them. And The Invisible Man.
Yes.
Both were made available through, they're calling it Amazon Prime Cinema or something.
I didn't even realize they had given it a special name.
Well, for Amazon they have.
Okay.
I'm sure it's on demand other places.
Okay.
For on Amazon it's called like Amazon Prime
but
Cinema.
Is that created to be very clear that these are movies that were supposed to be still on the big
yeah,
screen
I
and
think
now
so,
you're
because
watching
all
at home
of the
because of
Emma
the
and Onward
okay.
and the two that we rented for tonight.
Yeah.
Are all part of that. Birds
okay.
of Prey is on there.
Can't wait till those tonight. We'll talk about those next time.
Yeah. We're going to watch The Way Back and Bloodshot.
Woohoo.
Vin Diesel, baby.
It's how I quarantine. My Diesel.
So do you want to talk about Invisible Man or The Hunt?
Well, don't. Are we going to talk about...
And then we'll talk about the other two.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So Invisible Man, I really, really liked. At the same time, there was a lot of hype about it on the interwebs, and I thought it was going to blow me in a way that it didn't, but that I'm not saying any, I don't mean to say anything negative about it because I really liked it. I don't know. I guess so many people had loved it in a way that made me think it was going to just change my world.
Right.
It didn't
yeah,
change my
I
world.
Think...
So I really liked it. Elizabeth Moss was great.
Really good.
Yeah.
Some big surprises. I think I had a very similar reaction, which is, you know, I liked it. I didn't love it. And some of that may be because of the amount of hype building up to the movie. Some of it may be because we watched it at home. And I know one of the things that people commented on, like the weekend it came out when everybody was going so crazy for it, one of the things that people had commented on was the sound design.
Mm-hmm.
And even watching it at home, I could hear places where, like, there's a clear, oh, this is supposed to be a bass rumble or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could tell that there were things going on that probably would have had a greater impact had we seen it theatrically. I mean, we did our best to give it a shot. We turned the lights out. We put our devices away. We weren't, you know, like, tweeting through it
right,
or anything
yeah,
like that.
Right.
But yeah, I'm sure it lost something in the translation from the theater to our TV. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I thought it was good. I thought it was really well done. I think Lee Whannell is really confident as a filmmaker, which is really interesting. This is only like his third movie, but it was really, really confident.
For sure, yeah. And I loved Aldous Hodge. Am I saying that correctly? Is it Aldous or Eldis?
I think Aldous.
Aldous Hodge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his.
I used to like him on Leverage.
Yeah.
Which was a show I watched all of.
I remember.
Mostly because I was reviewing every season when I was writing for DVD Verdict.
Oh my gosh.
I was reviewing every season of Leverage.
TNT show?
TNT's Leverage.
Who I've seen Leverage?
Timothy Hutton.
Yes,
maybe.
That's right. Okay.
He was the
Aldous
other
Hodge was, I thought, really good and really good.
Take it easy. but yeah, Invisible Man was good.
So something that I saw on Twitter, Jeremy Gardner.
Yeah.
Tweeted something that I had thought and possibly said out loud to you as well. It's not too spoilery, right?
Kind of spoilery.
Kind of. Okay. Well,
you were just questioning a character's like superpowered abilities.
Right. Right. And he kind of.
Not having to do with invisibility.
Right. Right. You have nothing to do with that, but just, wow. Okay. So no spoilers, but Jeremy Gardner had a tweet that was like almost exactly what I had thought and or said to you the night before. So, yeah. All right. What else?
The Hunt. What did you think of The Hunt?
I thought The Hunt was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in pretty much the same place on both of these movies.
I mean, I enjoyed watching it.
Sure.
I don't think I need to watch it again.
No.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel that way about The Invisible Man, too. And The Invisible Man is a much better movie.
For sure.
But I kind of feel like I don't know that.
I don't know. I could, man, we could throw it on Scary Movie Month and I would be happy to watch it again.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
But I don't think The Hunt I would be picking for anything to show anybody. And I don't know. Yeah. No, it was good. It was fine.
The controversy around it makes very little sense. Obviously, this was a movie that, you know, was delayed because people got upset. They felt like they were being targeted, which is the premise of the movie. But of course, the villains of the movie are the left, so boycotting or protesting the movie made no sense.
So it was like Republicans kind of in general who were upset about it?
Yes.
But it makes...
Because it's a movie about them being
liberals look
hunted.
Bad.
Exactly.
And yeah, I don't know.
And really, it's designed to make everybody look bad.
Yeah, which in the end, as it goes, you don't get that like right away. But then by the end, yeah, everybody looks bad. And
that's the stuff that didn't work for me, honestly.
Right.
Like, there's some like CG violence that I wasn't crazy about. A lot of surprises.
Betty Gilpin was good, as you said. You wish that she had a better action movie to star in.
I kind of wished the whole movie was just a regular action movie. Like, get rid of all of the attempt at, I would say, political subtext, but it's not. It's literally just text.
Mm-hmm.
You have characters calling other characters deplorables, and it's like.
On the
it's
nose.
It's the kind of thing that thinks it's clever, but yeah, it's just completely on the nose.
A little bit of the newsroom in there with a different
maybe,
subject matter.
Yeah, right. we've seen this before, you know, it's The Most Dangerous Game, basically.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish they just made The Most Dangerous Game and made Betty Gilpin the hero.
Right.
And it was just like a straightforward action movie.
Can
and I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more had they gotten rid of. There's a fight scene at the end that's pretty great.
Yeah.
There's good stuff in it, you know, I thought it was just okay.
Let's write a screenplay.
All right.
Will Betty Gilpin do it?
I assume so.
If we offer it to her. Will she be interested in the Bromley's screenplay?
Why would she not be?
Yeah, right.
Two more movies we'll talk about.
Two more? Yeah. Only two?
Only two.
Okay, which two?
Well, first, we read Rob DiCristino's review of Holly Slept Over, a new sex comedy. From somebody Friedlander, Jerome Friedlander, maybe?
Yeah, sure. That sounds right.
Okay.
I could look it up. Jonathan
Friedlander. Sorry.
Yes,
okay.
Jonathan
Written
Friedlander.
And directed by Jonathan Friedlander about a man who finds out his wife had sex with a woman in college and then proposes that they all have a threesome and hijinks ensue. And Rob really hated the movie and wrote a really negative review. And then we were those horrible people who read his review and were like, well, let's watch that instead of saying, no, he's giving us every indication to stay away from this movie.
Listen, I like sex. I like comedy. So, you know, I was ready to rent it.
You heard threesome and you couldn't press rent fast enough. So we rented Holly Slept Over and Rob was right about everything he said.
Oh my gosh.
It's
really bad.
Yeah.
You jumped right into the
main... In a way that's competent.
Sure.
It's competently made and competently acted.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a movie. But it's really bad.
Oh my gosh. It felt to me like if a movie that was a hot breakthrough at Sundance in 1998 had a cousin who had a cousin who had a cousin. So now where are we at? Like third or fourth? We're like a fourth cousin to that film.
Right.
And then it got left on the shelf. And then it got scratched up a little. No, it looks great. That's not what I'm implying at all. It's just like somebody's distant. It's like a Better Things distant cousin with, I don't know, something missing. I don't know. It's just so, I don't know. It's not, it's bad. It's bad, bad, bad. You jumped right into the main, like, plot details right there, right? Like, former college roommate, and she comes to visit, and the husband finds out, and so then he says this. Okay, but you jumped over the whole introduction of these two married couples, and they're friends, in the way that, like, they just pop over at each other's houses unannounced all the time. And I know there are lots of people who like that kind of lifestyle. It's just not me. Like, it's just like show up and walk in and sit on my couch and I'm like, I didn't know you were coming over. Like, I'm very welcoming, but not without like just a little notice.
Well, not only that, show up, pop over, and sit on your couch and share the most graphic, intimate details of your private life.
And negative about each other's, but like, where, I don't know. There's so much. I don't want to.
We don't have the kinds of friends where we hang out and complain about our spouses.
No one complains to us about their spouses.
Right.
We don't complain about our spouses to them. Like, I don't know. It's like, especially in this way, like what? But so that seemed unrealistic, but it wasn't just that, because I know there are people in life who that's the basis of a lot of their relationships, or even just friends who gossip a lot, right? Like some people, that's all they have to talk about. But in this, it's again, so, it seems like one person's idea of what this is what married life is like, and these are what couples are going to talk about and do when they're older. I don't know really anyone who...
It's informed only by shitty sitcoms.
Yes, by shitty sitcoms.
It's very clearly
shitty,
written and directed
shitty sitcoms.
By a man.
Yes, yes.
Who has just idiotic ideas about
Ron Livingston's character. Yeah. There's a version of that guy in real life, of course, but like I don't know. It was uncomfortable to watch in a way because it felt like such a lesser version of anything. It felt like a lesser version of a shitty sitcom, and the shitty sitcom is already bad enough,
right?
You know,
right?
I mean, the main thing that he even... Oh, God. And then, you know, in movies where we're like, oh, gosh, if people would just communicate, everything would be fine. Like, if people would just communicate, everything would be fine.
Yeah, but there's a whole beat in this. Well, whatever. It doesn't matter. There's a whole beat in this movie where, like, the friend is very straightforward and says, like, your husband just asked if I wanted to have a threesome with you guys.
Yeah, right.
And the wife gets very upset, and there's this whole argument that the three of them have where the wife is like, no way that's happening. This is totally inappropriate. I need to be by myself. And it's 15 minutes of the movie mm-hmm. that we know that we're still going there. So mm-hmm. why are we doing this 15 minutes? Like, we learn nothing about the characters. None of it's funny.
Right.
Maybe it's supposed to be funny, but there are no jokes.
No, it's not funny.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's not true.
It was not good.
No, the characters are all... stereotypes on like crack, you know, I don't know. Because, you know, Holly is like the manic pixie threesome dream girl. And I mean, she arrives to visit and the wife is not fully honest at all too. So it's funny when the wife is getting all upset, but then it's like she's not being honest at all. So why is she getting upset and freaking out to the extent that, I mean, I could understand her being kind of shocked by how it all came out, but then she's so angry and whiny at one point, and then we realize or find out later that she had like lied in kind of a major way, right? But then even the husband getting upset about that, it's so ridiculous. Like, it's so...
Is that supposed to... Is his reaction supposed to be funny? Well, like, I don't know.
Like, right.
And the stuff with Ron Livingston is supposed to be funny. It's not, but I get the idea that, like, okay, there's a joke here.
Right, they're trying. Like, right.
The other stuff, I don't know.
No.
Any of the A story... Where is the comedy?
No. And the tone is not right. But again...
It reminded me of... And you're not going to like this.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That HBO show, The Mind of the Married Man.
Oh, my gosh. I am the one person in the world who loved that show. Only me. Wait, is it only me? Can I say something to our listeners?
Yes.
Did anyone else watch Mind of a Married Man on HBO and recognize that it had many problems, but you still loved it? Because I loved that show, and I have always wanted to buy it, like the box set,
we
DVD.
Have the first season.
Right,
but
then they never
the
released the rest.
Season.
Right, and I think it ended like pretty badly, as most shows. Many shows.
I don't remember how it ended.
You know, some shows, they go six seasons, but it's like... After season two, you know, season
Most
three starts
shows that we've ever watched.
Yes, they always. Oh my god! Do you remember when we watched Nip Tuck, and then by the end we were hate watching it? We're like, we have
That's
to
every show.
We have
Rescue
to finish
me.
It, but we don't like it. Rescue Me!
Sons
they just started
Anarchy.
Killing off everyone. Every episode, someone died. It was
do you
like,
remember how much we
have
hated
anything?
Sons of Anarchy by the end?
Yes, and by I think it was season two. You reviewed it for DVD Verdict, and you wrote something that was so great. Do those exist online anymore?
I don't think so.
Can we read your Verdict reviews?
No.
Do you remember your review for Tokyo Drift?
No.
Me neither, but I think it was good. Anyway, so...
I don't think I reviewed Tokyo Drift.
Yes, you did. It stands out in my mind.
All right.
I think you did.
I don't think I did.
I think you did.
All right.
Who did?
I don't know.
Brett Cullum. Hi,
if
Brett.
It wasn't me. I couldn't tell
Brett's not
you.
Listening. Maybe it was Eric Aschberger. Hi, Eric. Okay, wait. What was I talking about? DVD Verdict, your reviews,
Sons
of Anarchy.
I said season two was good.
Yes.
It tried to turn people onto the show.
Yes.
And the very next season, it turned into
right.
a garbage
and
fire.
Then
it's and
like
it's so embarrassing because you're telling people
over to Ireland,
like,
everyone's dying, and kill another one, kill another
Ireland.
One, kill another one. Rescue Me and Sons of Anarchy have a lot in common, actually.
These are all FX shows, by the way, so maybe we should just
oh,
shouldn't
Nip
have
Tuck
watched
too?
FX shows. Yeah.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Mind of a Merry Man.
Mind of a Merry Man, I loved.
Kind
and so
of
it
reminded me of Holly Slipped Over.
Okay, I can see it.
Yeah.
But no way was Mind of a Merry Man as bad. No way. But I can see, what you're
All right.
a little
All right.
bit. Yeah.
All right.
But okay, I'm afraid that people listening are going to be like, oh gosh, I have to see this to
yeah,
see
no,
what
don't.
They're talking about. Don't.
No.
Rent any other movie with Threesome. Rent Threesome. There's probably a movie just called Threesome, right?
There is, but it's not good.
Oh,
Stephen Baldwin.
Darn it.
And
oh.
your boy, Josh Charles?
Sure, yeah.
Right?
He's my boy?
Isn't he?
I mean,
The
he's...
Good Wife, Josh Charles?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he can kind of, he can be my boy.
Well, you like him on Twitter too, right?
I do. You know what? He doesn't show up in my feed anymore. Did he block me? But I used to love him on Twitter because like, when like decent looking guys are just super sensitive and strong in their help everyone empathetic positions about the
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited
by that. Susceptible
to
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have one more movie to talk about. We watched it last night. It is the 2019 remake of Black Christmas. The third, I guess the second remake of Black Christmas, the third telling of Black Christmas.
Yeah.
Directed by Sophie Takal.
Yes.
Sophia Takal?
Yes, Sophia Takal.
And written by her and April
Wolf.
Uh-huh. This had come out last December. It was a movie that came together very quickly because I feel like I remember them announcing it basically in the spring and it was already out by Christmas.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And was pretty polarizing, I think, when it came out.
I honestly don't No, in the real world, everything is the real world. I take that back. People don't like when I say that because they're like, well, just because you saw it on Twitter, that's still the real world. And you're right. It is the real world. It's just that sometimes, sometimes things that are very, very all encompassing and like they're huge on Twitter and not one person in my off Twitter life like even knows about the controversy. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So that's what I mean when I say that. And
sure.
I work with a lot of people. I talk to over 100 people a day every day. And I don't know.
None of them were arguing about the merits of the Black Christmas remake.
Not one person.
That's surprising to me.
But on my Twitter feed during that time, it was like that's all that's all there was. So
I will defer to you on this because as a man, I'm not allowed to have an opinion.
You are allowed to have an opinion.
I didn't like it.
Okay. You're allowed to say that.
Yeah.
And this is, the thing is, you didn't like it, and it wasn't like you didn't like it because of the reasons that a lot of other men
were not
liking it.
There may be men. I don't know
it.
Who
yeah.
the men are, and
no,
I'm sure
I
they
know.
Exist. This is not me saying these men don't exist. I just didn't see them. But I try to mostly stay off Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I am on Twitter, I'm very seldom...
In your feed, you're just like...
I'm in my feed, or even if I am in my feed, I'm not seeing people that I don't follow.
Right.
So,
right.
And I'm not following the men who felt attacked by this movie
right.
and who wanted to put it down because they felt like they were being attacked as a man.
Right. And I don't follow those men either.
You should, though.
Oh, yeah, that would bring so much joy to my life.
It would make Twitter an even better experience.
Oh, no. But I do. I did see people in my Twitter feed whom I trust and like and appreciate like their thoughts and takes on things. So they were sort of arguing against those men that you refer to.
Right.
And so I guess, yeah, I don't know. To me, it was fine. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I wasn't particularly scared. I was annoyed by my own personal, you know, I am always able to suspend disbelief. I think all of us movie lovers can do that. There were just a few things in this movie that I was struggling with because it's so very much set in the current day and age. Like they make a point
yeah.
of it being very current right now. These are hot topic issues. These are like phrases that are popular with college age students like right now. So because they make such a point of that, I felt like there were other things, and I don't want to give away any spoilers, but there were other things that just all of a sudden, I don't know what I can say. I mean, just sometimes they would be running around without their phones. And I'm like, maybe I missed why they all had to lock up their phones or something. But why don't they have their phones with them? Because I know that they would because
right.
we're talking about, I don't know, little things. But I thought Imogen
Poots.
Yep. I thought she gave a great performance. She was believable. And like I felt for her at a lot of points, especially in the beginning. She and some of the girls have to do this little show, little dance act thing. And she's, for various reasons, like uncomfortable and not happy about it, but she perseveres and a lot of nuance in her facial expressions and things. So I thought she was good. But then it just takes a turn too at one point with some of the fraternity /
yeah, it introduces some concepts that I didn't think
yeah.
worked.
Again, I don't want any
spoilers.
It goes
in a completely different direction. It's very different from previous
right.
iterations of Black Christmas.
Right.
Not my issue with it. Like,
mm-hmm.
you didn't follow the story of
yeah.
Black Christmas. That's fine.
Tell
that me a different
bother
story.
Me.
Yeah.
Right. That doesn't bother me at all. Although I will say that specific story, like that sort of thing, that's not my, maybe, again, it's just me. Like, that wasn't
yeah.
how I wanted it to go, but that's okay. I don't expect it to be just for me. I just didn't love it.
It says some stuff that I think some people need to hear and
mm-hmm.
like
oh,
to
yeah.
hear, and that's great. I just wish it had found a better, maybe more clever or more subtle way of saying some of that stuff, because like The Hunt, in many instances, it just has the characters come out and say the thing.
Right.
There's no subtext. There's only text.
And sometimes it's like a list of things, too. So, yeah,
right.
it would be nice if at least part of it was a little more. I did have one high school student of mine who had heard of this movie and wanted to see it. And I was excited about that, like during the winter time when it came out, because none of my other students even had heard of it. Like,
yeah.
Knew, they didn't know anything about it. So.
And hopefully that student saw
yeah,
it and loved it.
I hope so. Yeah, yeah. Right. Right.
Let's talk about The Firm.
The Firm.
This came up because you had wanted to rewatch it.
Yes.
Why did you want to
As
rewatch it?
As I always
it?
Do. No, I don't remember. Did something did something remind me of
I don't
The Firm?
Know.
Maybe I'd asked you if you'd see The Firm. You said yes,
of
but
course
not
I've
right,
seen the
but not
firm.
In for like for a long time.
Yeah,
I know.
No, I don't think I've
but
seen
what
it
came
since
up and
1993.
Made me watch it, 'cause more than once I was like, we got to watch The Firm again.
Yeah, I brought it up from the basement
yes.
like thinking and wasn't planning on doing a podcast on it.
But here we are yeah.
talking about the, I'm going to tell you about The Firm. and I saw this opening day, I think, in 1993 with my mom,
oh,
who had
so
read the
jealous.
Book.
Oh, yay.
And then I don't think I've seen it since then.
I think my mom had read the book too, but I don't remember.
I think all of our moms read
yes,
the book. I think
for
they
sure.
were just issued this book.
They were. All the moms and dads at the time.
This was the first big like Grisham adaptation, yes?
Was it?
To my memory, yes.
Okay.
And kind of kicked off an entire series of movies of Grisham adaptations, all of which I saw, just kidding, I didn't see all of them.
You didn't?
Because I started to resent them after a while.
Oh, no.
Because it was the formula was always the same, and it was always like pushing the new hot young thing on us because they had had so much success with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And so we get A Time to Kill, and they're pushing Matthew McConaughey on us, and that is not a movie I like. And we get The Chamber, and it's pushing Chris O'Donnell on us, and I didn't see that movie.
You didn't?
No.
Okay.
So by the time we get The Rainmaker,
which
and they're
love.
Pushing Matt Damon yeah. on us, I was like, yeah, no thanks. I'll pass. And then I went in 1997, early 1997, I was going to go see a bunch of movies. I think I saw four that day. I want to say they are, and I could be wrong. Maybe I'm remembering these coming out at the wrong time.
Okay.
Flubber. Just whatever I hadn't seen. Anastasia, the animated movie. The Jackal, with Bruce Willis and this Richard
is,
Gere.
This is what we used to do, though.
And The Rainmaker.
Okay.
And The Rainmaker was like, it fit. Uh-huh. It was a sky high. It mm-hmm. was like, sure, I'll see The Rainmaker. It starts now. And I loved The Rainmaker, and I still yeah. love The Rainmaker.
Yes.
Of the Grisham adaptations I've seen, it's my favorite, even more so than Runaway Jury. The Firm, a distant third.
Oh, did you have to say distant third? You could just say third. I was so happy that
I
it was
think
third.
It's a distant third. I don't
no,
know how
I
crazy
don't blame
about
you,
this
though.
Movie I am.
I know. Gosh, I can't believe
explain
we're having our
to
first
me why
fight.
It's good besides the cast.
Oh, I have no great explanation because I was obsessed with Tom Cruise and the movie came out and I loved Tom Cruise and he's completely just, you know, like this sweet,
he's
trustworthy.
He's on movie star autopilot.
Oh, he completely is. I know. It's
it
ridiculous.
Doesn't do anything to take advantage of no. what's good about Tom Cruise.
No, no.
Even A Few Good well, Men, where he plays a hotshot young lawyer, I think makes better use of the Tom Cruise movie star persona than The Firm does.
Okay. No. Yes, I agree
Let's
with you.
Let's fight about this.
I will. Oh, my God. This is our first fight. I will agree with you about that completely.
Thank you.
There are like one or two moments in the movie where he becomes Tom Cruise, like top Tom Cruise.
Okay.
One,
TTC.
Yeah. One I think was when he
runs.
I love when he runs.
Oh my
yes,
God.
Of course. Shh. when he comes home, am I allowed to speak spoilers for The Firm?
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, I would love if someone out there, though, hasn't seen it and goes and sees it. So please do that. But he comes home at one point and he also just say this. He knows something that he's not supposed to know. His wife doesn't know yet, but he wants her to know. But he's got to be careful about how he tells her.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just like this look he gives her mm-hmm. and this way that he moves around the house. He
cranks
and
up the Lyle Lovett.
Yes, he does. Lyle, the music in
I
this
think
movie,
it's Lyle Lovett.
I don't
know
if it
for
is.
Sure.
I don't know if it is. I didn't look
it
that
seems
up.
Like it would
okay,
be.
Okay, sure. Memphis 93. This is what they're listening to. Yeah, no, and then I don't remember. There's one other part, like where he has to like sort of take control, and it's
can't
like
remember
that,
it didn't
that
happen.
Tom Cruise.
Is it when he beats the shit out of an old man?
Oh my gosh, I erased
a heavy
from
set
my
old man,
memory.
A heavy set diabetic old man.
Was it necessary that he
beats
do that?
The shit out of him.
Was it necessary that he do that?
I mean, maybe not to that degree.
Oh come on, yes, it was. Right?
Maybe some stern words could have had the same outcome.
You know, speaking of Tom Cruise as Tom Cruise, let
we
me
are.
Just yeah, let me just read to you something that Roger Ebert, the great Roger Ebert, wrote about. Here, this is kind of long. Can I read this?
Of course.
Okay. Sidney Pollack, the director, likes to make long, ambitious movies, and he's comfortable working with familiar stars. He uses them as character-building shorthand. So I think this is kind of what you are saying, that they didn't use Tom Cruise like well enough. But here he says,
he's fine.
Yeah, he says, one glimpse of Hal Holbrook as the head of the firm, for example, and we know it's a shady outfit. Which, by the way, Hal Holbrook is like, it does. As soon as I see him, all these feelings come back to me of like, ooh, bad, evil, so sneaky. And that's like him in every movie. Like since the firm.
Wow.
I always think of that shot of him and Wilford Brimley, that shot when Tom Cruise shows up super, I'm sorry, Mitch McDeer, right? Is that his name?
Mitch McDeer.
Mitch, yeah. My man, Mitch. he shows up to his first day super early, right? Isn't his first day? Or maybe it's not his first day.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. He shows up early. And it's kind of dark still in the firm.
Oh, Wilford Brimley's in like one of the offices.
Yes, and yeah. The office is lit and they're looking through stuff.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of look at him and they turn
their
head.
It's one of
the
people that like died in the
accident in the Caymans, right? Kaczynski and Hodges, one of those offices. It might be Kaczynski. Do I have that right?
Sure.
Kaczynski and Hodges, I think.
You remember the firm better than me.
Yeah, the firm.
We just watched it yesterday.
The firm.
They say the firm a lot in the movie, by the way.
Which is why I keep saying it. So Wilford Brimley, though, turns his head. Just like looks to the left, like out the door, and makes eye contact with Tom Cruise, and it reminds me of this is so dumb, but it reminds me of the shot in The Shining when you see the man sitting on I think the edge of the bed.
The shot that you're obsessed
and
with.
There's the guy. Yes, there's the guy in the bear suit. Right, yeah. It's a bear. When I was younger, I thought it was a dog or a pig.
I think I thought it was a pig.
Yeah, but. Regardless, that yeah. shot of like one man as full animal costume furry and the guy on the edge of the bed and there's just no it happens, right? It's like this shot. Anyway, it reminds me of that and Wilford Brimley just looks and then they shut the door and as a younger person seeing the firm, this is the beginning of this is eerie and something's up and whatever. And so I don't know. I just love how they do that shot. But anyway, Ebert goes on to say that Holbrook almost always plays a seemingly respectable man with dark secrets. One look at Gene Hackman, oh gosh, who's so good in this movie and every movie. That's me, not Ebert. Okay. One look at Gene Hackman as the law partner who becomes Cruise's mentor, and we know he's a flawed but fundamentally decent man because he always is. One look at Cruise and we feel comfortable because he embodies sincerity. He is also, in many of his roles, just a little slow to catch on. His characters seem to trust people too easily, and so it's convincing when he swallows the firm's pitches and pep talks. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's certainly applauding the movie's casting.
Yeah.
Which I can't argue with the cast of this movie.
Gosh,
it goes really deep, and every person you get to, including, you know, when Paul Sorvino and Jelly show up at the end, it's like, yeah, perfect, great.
Yes. I took note, like, oh my gosh, Uncle Polly. I forgot Uncle Polly was in this because I saw. This came out in 93, right?
Correct.
Goodfellas came out in 90.
Correct.
Goodfellas, as I think at least maybe one or two people who listen to the show know, is like one of my favorite movies ever. maybe.
It's tied with 15 other movies.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the way it should be. I had not seen Goodfellas yet, though, when I saw The Firm.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you see Goodfellas?
Years later. I was so little. I was a kid. I was a baby. No. I was too young to see Goodfellas when it came out.
I was too, but I saw it.
Yes, but you got away with things.
True.
That I did not get away with, but I did see Sleepaway Camp and Silent Night, Deadly Night many years before you did.
You did, in fact.
In fact, I introduced you to Sleepaway Camp. We've covered that on this show before, right?
I think so,
okay.
Yeah.
So where was I? I hadn't seen Goodfellas yet. So now rewatching The Firm many years later, to me it's like Uncle Polly, because every movie since Goodfellas to me is me just like screaming Uncle Polly.
Right.
Yeah.
Even when Paul Sorvino isn't in the movie?
Right. Just Uncle Polly.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing that you do.
You know what? People like it. Guys named Polly like it.
Favorite performance of the movie.
Oh, there are so many. Oh my gosh, I didn't even go on to say okay, so Ed Harris is in this movie.
Yeah.
He's shaved, bald. He is so believable as this sort of like, he's an FBI agent who's like doing his job, I think, right, but there's still something a little bit sincere about that too, like his approach to things. Holly Hunter and
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey, thank you so much. They aren't in a ton of the movie. I love them so, so much. I think they, and Jeannie Triplehorn, we have so much to talk about. Okay, back it up. Holly Hunter.
Backing it up.
Back it up. Gary Busey.
Holly Hunter's in a lot of the movie.
Yeah, she is. She is, yes.
I don't think she has a ton to do.
She doesn't.
And that's, it's not a problem with the movie, but I feel like that's where Ebert's, what he's talking about, where that is really demonstrated for me is.
Because he goes on and talks about all these people and all their performances. Yeah.
And that's Gary Busey and Holly Hunter and their two scenes together. It's shorthand and you're like, oh, okay, they're in their own movie. Uh-huh. And part of me wishes I was watching that movie.
I know. Yeah. It feels like.
But Gary Busey leaves the movie pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. That's like
one. That's a bummer.
It is. Because
Holly Hunter sticks around, but then doesn't have anything to do.
No, I mean, I guess it's kind of one note what she is asked to do, but it's important, but it's just like show up and help with this.
Make copies.
Show
right.
up and help with this.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas in her scenes with Gary Busey, there's a whole life there. She's a whole person who has a whole story going on.
Yeah.
And as soon as he's out of the movie's just like, all right, yeah, have her make copies for Tom Cruise.
Right. I wonder, I've never read the books. So
Nor
I
have I. I've
that...
never read any John Grisham books.
Okay. Yeah, I know this.
Including Surviving Christmas. Or no, Christmas with the Cranks. Sorry.
I was like, what?
Christmas with the Cranks, he wrote.
He did not. Did he?
He
really?
Did, yeah.
He really did?
Yes. But it was called something else.
Oh.
It was called, like, Canceling Christmas, which is why I screwed up the title.
Okay.
But he really did write that.
What was the Christmas movie that was really terrible but I cried?
Eight Crazy Nights?
Eight Crazy Nights is a Hanukkah movie.
Did you cry in Four Christmases?
I think so.
You were about to give birth to our child.
I was like 9 months pregnant.
It was the day that he was due, actually.
Yeah. Was it really his due date?
Yeah. Because
Charlie was 5 days late. Oh, yeah. Well, they're also like.
Because it was the day before Thanksgiving, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We saw it with your mom. Yeah. And I sat on the other side of you, and I was so thankful because I don't like anyone to see me cry.
Especially in Four Christmases.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
A garbage movie.
But I was so kind of embarrassed, but not really embarrassed, but just, no, I cried because it was like a sad time. My dad had just died.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Sorry to bring it down on the podcast. Wow. But isn't there like some dad stuff in that movie?
Probably. There's Four Christmases.
Yeah.
One of them has to have something to do with a dad,
Robert
Duvall maybe is like a dad at one of the Christmases. There are four of them.
Boo Radley.
And that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in The Firm.
No.
Surprisingly.
Not. He could have been.
Yeah.
He easily could have been.
Yeah, he could have been Gene Hackman part, probably.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Gene Hackman is so good. So Gene Hackman's good in everything. And
yes.
I can't imagine that there's any one. I don't believe there's one person alive in the world who like doesn't like Gene Hackman. Do you think there's one person who could say, I don't like Gene Hackman?
I know as a kid I didn't appreciate Gene Hackman.
Yeah, you've talked about this before.
He was just like this actor that my parents would watch.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like,
makes sense. Did you like him in Superman?
I mean, I was more into Superman.
Okay. Like, but I always thought he was so funny. Like, I don't know.
I guess. I don't know.
Okay. And what was that other 80s kids movie that I love that Gene Hackman's in? I'm blanking.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, anyway.
What? I have no idea what that would be.
Oh, it's not. It's too blurry in my head.
Okay.
I'll look it up secretly when you're talking about something really interesting.
Oh, good.
And I don't need to say anything at all. Go. No. So Gene Hackman's so good in this. But what Ebert says about him is exactly right. And then later on, Ebert talks about, there's a scene later between.
I don't agree with Ebert's thing that we know that Gene Hackman is going to be decent, though. Because I think Gene Hackman plays a bastard better than most people.
He does. And he's so.
He's not a bastard in this movie. He ultimately is a decent person who's very flawed.
Yes.
All of that is true.
Right. Oh, yes.
But this argument that
humanity.
We know that Gene Hackman is always going to be decent,
yeah.
I do not agree with.
Okay. All right.
He had made Unforgiven at this point, and he's like the world's biggest bastard in Unforgiven.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, he talks about that. Let's see. Gene Hackman later in the movie has this scene with Triplehorn. And again, I don't want to. I'm hoping someone will watch this for the first time because it's worth seeing for sure. I thought it was immensely entertaining. It's long. I was never bored. You're going to tell me you were bored, weren't you?
No, I was never bored.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
It's long, but just as a fan of actors, it's worth seeing.
Right. Terry Kinney is in it.
Yeah.
Like David, we didn't even talk about David Strathairn. Did I say that right?
Right, right.
The last name always catches me with that one. No, let's go. Gene Hackman, there's a scene with him and Triplehorn. And we haven't even talked about her
Genes.
Yet. She's so cute. Triplehorn, where Ebert says, a late tricky scene between Hackman and Triplehorn is like a masterclass in acting. That was, you know, when he wrote this, it was before everyone used masterclass to describe everything, because everything, it's a masterclass in fill in the blank. It's a masterclass. But no, really, at the time that Ebert said that, I don't feel like it was said about everything.
It's a masterclass in sperm puppets.
Yes, it is.
I used to open for the sperm puppets.
I bought your first album.
They were an indie band mm-hmm. from Chicago in the early 90s.
Yeah, I liked you guys live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was really good. Yeah, that scene, though, between them is good, isn't it?
Like, it's good. His character is really interesting because, again, he has, like, this interior life that not all the other characters have.
Right, and it comes out in little parts, and I don't even I feel like I miss stuff, like between like something between him and his wife or ex-wife or going
no,
to be
he's married.
Ex-wife. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, he comes on early on. He comes on as Tom Cruise's mentor, and he's sort of, you know, like warm and upbeat all the time with Tom Cruise, and you aren't sure in the beginning, like if it's genuine or if it's part of his, it's part of what the firm is telling him to do. And, but by the end, yeah, you see all these like layers to his personality. He's so sort of sad in that moment when he says, like, she says something, what are you going to do? Or what are they going to do to you? And he says, whatever they've done to me, it's already been done. And then it's just so sad, but he like knows it and he has this look and yeah. I want to ask you something about that scene,
but
I can't. No, it's spoilery.
It's fine. You can spoil this movie.
Because I left the room to like use the washroom or do something, and I can't remember. Do Jeannie Triplehorn and Gene Hackman have sex?
No.
She drugs him.
He passes out.
But then I couldn't remember if like they did after that. Like
after he was passed out?
Well, when he woke up.
He doesn't wake up till the next morning.
Right, but that's
and
like
she's
right,
like
okay.
pretending that they had. She comes out in a robe and like yeah. is acting like they
right.
slept together.
That's, oh yeah, that's when he says don't.
They never
don't. They called.
He already
yeah,
knows
yeah, yeah. Right,
that
right,
they
right.
didn't, and mm-hmm. he figures out that she was using
right.
him. And yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like either the Grisham novel, and again, I can't speak to the novel. I feel like the movie wants us a little bit to believe that, like, Gene Hackman is who Tom Cruise will be if he stays at this firm long enough.
For sure.
I don't agree with that at all.
There's, like, more than one line that implies that, yeah.
I don't agree with that at all. There's nothing about Tom Cruise's character, his temperament, his intensity, nothing about him
right.
suggests to me that he will someday turn into Gene Hackman.
Would he turn into Terry Kinney's character?
More so than yeah. Gene Hackman,
right.
yeah.
There's that scene where two of the lawyers in the firm are killed, and it's a shock to all.
The firm.
And Terry Kinney's sitting out in his yard in front of the sprinkler, and he's got his leg crossed. And you can tell he's just kind of grieving/pondering/whatever.
Right.
And it cuts to a close-up of him where he doesn't move out of the way. He's just sitting there, and he's like in the zone, right? Like in a shock state or something. And the sprinkler gets his leg, and Tom Cruise notices it. And then it cuts to whatever the next scene is. But it's just like little things like that that, I don't know, I like it. I like how the movie moves. I like how it kind of connects everything. It's not totally on the nose at first, but then it gets to a point where it's kind of on the nose.
It spends almost no time building up the firm as being something sinister. It goes from like, yay, I have this job at the firm, to this is an evil place that murders its lawyers.
Right. But I do think it sort of jumps right into, it works like how it jumps right into the firm is a dream come true. The firm is too good to be true, right? Like, it doesn't, so you're saying
yeah.
it doesn't really develop a lot of that. It becomes
right.
that right away.
But yeah.
like the fact that it right away is just like, everything here is done for you and taken care of for you, and you're going to live such a good, carefree life, and you're going to be so rich, and we're paying you way more than anyone else was willing to pay you, even though it's Memphis and not Chicago or New York. And they just kind of like hammer you with all that stuff, but within like 5 minutes. So at least it gets it out of the way. But then
right.
in a sense, the movie takes that as, we've established this, so now we can move right on to, also, we're dirty.
There was a point that I turned to you and said, don't you feel like this movie's about 2/3 of the way over? And you said, yeah. And I said, we're an hour in. There's still 95 minutes
yeah.
left in the firm.
I know. And I don't know if that's, you know, we were feeling, because again, I wasn't bored, but did it feel longer because we're tired, it's late at night, we're watching it, like,
maybe
come up on the couch.
Maybe.
Like, maybe, I don't know. I never was bored, though.
No, it's not a boring movie.
But part
movie.
Of that is my own personal bias. I've seen it a lot. Like,
I didn't realize you'd seen it that many times.
Well, I didn't either, and then it all came back to me. The thing is, I haven't seen it a lot, like, in the past 10 years. But when, as soon as it came out on VHS, we bought it, and I think it wasn't, it's not quite up there with, like, Pretty Woman, Bird on a Wire, Can't Buy Me Love, Ghostbusters, Hairspray. I'm thinking of all the, like, VHS, like, right. repeats. It's not up there with those.
I just don't even feel
was,
like this is good Tom Cruise. Like,
it's not top Tom Cruise, TTC.
But that's surely why you were watching it so
All
often.
Tom Cruise was top Tom Cruise to me.
I don't... I'm sure if I looked at Sidney Pollack's filmography, I would find a lot of movies that I'm like, well, that's good. And
Havana.
That's
good. I've never seen Havana.
I haven't either.
Okay. Out of Africa. Wait, did he direct Out of Africa?
I never saw Out of Africa.
He did direct that, though,
yeah.
right? Okay.
Random Hearts.
Oh, wow. I remember. We saw that together,
night.
Didn't we? Yeah,
opening
we did.
Night.
Opening night for Random Hearts.
Because it was a movie,
so
and
romantic.
We had to go.
That is how we lived so much of our life. It's a movie. We have
yeah,
to go.
Right.
Like, that's truly how I felt about things. Like, it's a movie. I have to go see it.
I'm sure I have liked a number of movies in his filmography, but he's one of these guys who, like, I would compare him to, like, a Sidney Lumet, except Sidney Lumet is so good with actors. And I mean, in this case, Sidney Pollack is good with actors too, because he puts together this amazing cast. But just, I keep thinking about, whenever I think of Sidney Pollack, I think of Mike and I have this joke. Because when a Sidney Pollack movie came out called The Interpreter with Sean Penn and Nicole Kidman, which I've never seen, one of the review quotes, this was back when they used to, you know, put the review quotes in the TV spots or in the print advertising. And I don't even remember the full quote. I just remember somebody used the phrase, like, The Interpreter dazzles in the frighteningly capable hands of Sidney Pollack, something, something, something. And I just was like, frighteningly capable. What is that? But that's Sidney Pollack. Like, yeah, he's capable. He's good. You know, like, he knows how to put a movie together. But it's never in a way that's really going to, like, knock me on my ass. And that feels like The Firm. Like, he puts it together well. It's probably too long.
Yeah.
I like the choice to score it with just the solo piano.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while he brings in a different score and I'm like, no, you got to commit to just the piano and yeah. do that for the entire movie. You don't get to cheat and like right. bring in other instruments. But there's not, but then I think to myself, and I've done this with a couple other movies lately, if this was a Sidney Pollack movie from 1975 and it was Robert Redford in the Tom Cruise part and it had the mm-hmm. same caliber
right.
of cast, but just with all those people from the
right.
70s.
Right.
I think we'd all be talking about, like, oh, The Firm is this great
right.
movie about, you know, Watergate paranoia
uh-huh.
and like corruption in our systems.
Yeah.
So this same movie coming out in 93, for whatever reason, I'm like, oh no, it's this Hollywood adaptation of a fucking supermarket book, you know? Like, I'm not willing to give it the same amount of credit,
yeah.
which is completely unfair.
Fair,
I recognize
right.
this as a flaw
yeah,
on my part.
Right.
I'm acknowledging that I'm in the wrong here.
Is it because it's like a few years into the 90s, so we're past like the 80s greed is good movie, right? Like, we
right.
went from all the Wall Street stuff where this is now, this is like greed is bad. And it's away from Wall Street, but it's still dealing with like finance stuff and rich people staying rich at all costs. And I don't know. Does that make it like not as important or something? Like,
maybe.
Is that,
I don't know.
Like, it doesn't have the levity or the, I don't know.
Gravity.
Gravity. Yes, gravity. Sorry. It doesn't have the gravity. Like, it doesn't carry as much weight because it seems, or is it just simply like it's a Tom Cruise movie, so like that's why
bit,
it doesn't carry the gravity,
but
because
it is a little
that,
bit of a Tom Cruise movie
yeah.
based on a John Grisham book that's
absolutely.
Like exists
and
just to be
the poster and how they
read
advertise
on a plane
it yeah,
or watch
right,
on a plane
right,
you
right.
know
yeah
and I like I think I like courtroom thrillers more than I like legal thrillers. Because
okay.
this is, I guess, technically a legal thriller.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's very little about the law in the movie.
Yeah, you know what?
In there's some stuff about mail fraud and overcharging that becomes like the key to the whole thing. But there's not that much about the actual law.
Well, and that's what you just mentioned. That's where it gets a little bit confusing or just a little bit convoluted. I mean, even in that Ebert review I was talking about, he says something about how like the last half an hour that audiences could easily be confused.
I was when I saw it in 93. I specifically remember, I don't understand how Tom Cruise got out of this. But right. Watching it this time, I followed it.
Tom Cruise gets out of it because it's
Tom Cruise right, exactly.
Getting out of something. Yeah, and right. he's able to put together. No, but and even Ebert says like it kind of confused him in the end. It didn't bother him much, though. If I can find the quote. If the screenplay had been something like this, the screenplay had been developed more, this could have been a superior movie. Instead, it's just a good one with some fine performances. Like, he kind of hails the performances.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Robert Towne was one of the writers on the screenplay.
Yeah, speaking of Robert Towne, he also wrote, correct me if I'm wrong, Days of Thunder?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I wouldn't think so, but feel free to look that up.
Okay. I think he wrote, and what about Mission Impossible movies? Hold on.
He maybe wrote like Mission Impossible 2.
Writer for 22 films. I'm seeing Mission Impossible and Mission Impossible 2. Now, maybe he split. Maybe he co-wrote Mission Impossible.
Didn't David Koepp write the first Mission Impossible?
This is a fun exercise for everyone to listen to. Right. Oh, my gosh. The first Mission Impossible, according to what I'm looking at, had four writers.
You needed that many to make that magic.
Look at that list.
David Koepp, Steve Zalian, Robert Towne, and who's the fourth
Bruce
one?
Geller?
Bruce Geller. I don't
is
know
that
Bruce
right?
Geller, but
is that
three
right?
of those
is
are
correct?
Like Hall of Fame writers.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, and look, Days of Thunder is listed.
He really did write
right
Days of Thunder.
Right there. Well, it says that he wrote it. Yep.
That is very... We just rewatched
directed
that movie
directed by
during,
Tony Scott. Yes, we did.
During 1990 week.
Yeah,
and
we did.
I like that movie less than I like The Firm.
What? Yeah, of course. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Come on.
I didn't really like Days of Thunder at all.
Come on. I know. And it's fine. I forgive you. It's fine. Days of Thunder is like one of those movies where like I was starting it. Look, I'm like, I'm going to see it just because Tom Cruise is in it. And oh, my gosh. Wait, he met his wife in this movie.
Mm.
Oh, my God. I was like, so
that is the advantage that Days of Thunder has over Top Gun, which is it's Kidman, not McGillis.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I feel so bad, McGillis. But
if
but
placed
no.
in front of you, you would pick Top Gun, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Over Days of Thunder?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
100 times over. We're not even bringing up Cocktail. I can't believe it.
We don't need to bring up Cocktail.
We always need to bring it up. We don't. I'm just kidding. but wait, can we talk about Robert Towne? Okay, so he wrote all those movies. And then because I was thinking about Sidney Pollack and Tom Cruise, and then Sidney Pollack being in Eyes Wide Shut, and it seems
he's
like...
He's amazing in Eyes Wide Shut.
I know.
I love Sidney Pollack as an actor more than I do as a director.
I know, yeah. But there's just a lot of crossover where, like, when Tom Cruise works with someone, then he works with them a few times.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people who do that, but not everybody. Well, I don't
Sidney
know.
Sidney Pollack was a replacement on Eyes Wide
I
Shut.
I know that. It was for...
Harvey Keitel?
Yeah. What happened to Harvey Keitel again?
I think it was like a thing
where...
They had
to reshoot scenes and he wasn't available for the reshoots.
Something like that. Same with Jennifer Jason Leigh. Just the whole thing stretched on so long that I don't think it was like their performances were bad. I think it was just they had to do reshoots or they weren't available to to keep shooting.
But doesn't it seem like Tom Cruise works with someone and then he works with them a few
times? Yeah. And again, to be directed by Sidney Pollack, I mean, he has a better resume than maybe any other actor in terms of the directors that he's worked with. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but he's worked with basically every incredible, like, A-list director you can think of.
Not Martin Scorsese.
Color of Money.
Oh, my gosh, that's right! Yes!
Even Francis Ford Coppola on The Outsiders.
What?
Like
yes, you're right!
He's worked with everyone. Robert Altman. Okay.
Okay.
You know, like,
okay.
And I'm sure there are others we could name.
Oh,
everybody's sitting here at home. Like,
No, I'm really thinking about it now, though. And like, think about his movies. He's worked with everybody.
He's worked, yeah, with the fact that he's worked with Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, and Stanley Kubrick alone.
Yeah.
Is like, and then, you know, you throw in Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes.
And
Ron Howard. Jinx. You owe
the
me a
great
Coke.
Ron Howard. Tony Scott a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Back to The Firm.
The Firm.
Sidney Pollack.
Yep.
Of course.
Listen, stability in the family is really important. Okay?
Right.
No one divorces in the firm. All right.
Let's talk about, we're a family. Let's talk about
we keep each other's secrets. Who says, at some point someone says, one of the wives, we're not as gossipy. We keep each other's secrets. Or is that not a wife? I think that's one of the guys, the other members of the firm.
The firm.
It's like, we don't gossip, but we keep each other's secrets, which that I thought was funny. I'm like, well, there's some gossip there, right? We're family. What else?
Let's talk about one of the major plot beats of the firm that does not work for me at all. Which is Tom Cruise cheating on his wife.
I was going to bring this up, so thank you.
It's a huge deal, you know, and it exists for the firm to, like, have something on him.
Yeah, they need to hold something over him. And we don't want to show these pictures to your wife.
Show the way that...
Spoiler.
But he confesses, like, a scene later.
Yeah, I know.
So it's not even a thing that he has to live with for a long time. Because, you know, if he didn't tell her, he wouldn't be a good guy. And we need him to be a good guy.
Right. Well, I thought it made sense that he told her, though.
It's fine that he tells her.
It seems that
I'm all in favor of him telling her.
Yeah.
But then the whole thing where they're holding something over him dramatically doesn't work.
Right. But the fact that they tried and the fact that it like caused what it caused even for, I mean, it still is an issue. Like
it exists, you know, to show him being corrupted by the firm.
Yeah.
I just don't think any of it works. None of it makes sense to me. Like,
no,
he meets this random woman on a beach, and literally within 5 minutes, I'm not being hyperbolic.
Right,
it's
no,
within
I know.
5 minutes,
I know.
They are fucking on the beach.
And I think, did you kind of sort of forget that or forget some of the details about it? Because we were
yeah.
watching it. I said,
I thought they at least had a conversation.
Yeah, no, it's so dumb. And
they were charmed by one another.
It's specifically set up to show you that he is such a caring person as a character. He is this caring guy, right? And so she's like getting sort of attacked by some like, you know, drunk
asshole
on the beach, and she's screaming. So this is why he notices, right? His attention is drawn over to this woman who's like, oh, no, get off me, whatever. And then the guy locks eyes with Tom Cruise and takes off. And she falls over.
He knows not to mess with
Mitch. He's a paid
Mitch.
Actor as well.
I know.
And so she kind of falls in pain and he goes over to help her. So it's set up. It's specific. It's not even just like because they already had, which I forgot, the scene right before this is him having dinner and Gene Hackman's character is like dancing with some woman and they're all drinking and it's the tropical thing, right? And then... vacation life, babe. Okay, mm-hmm. This is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's
not
there's
in quarantine.
There's a woman trying to. Oh, we're having a vacation right now. I'm going to bring out the cocktails. She is like coming on him pretty hard at the table. This other woman.
But we don't know that woman is a firm plant.
Oh, I think she is.
Okay.
Don't you?
I don't know. That's just so insane to me.
But
that,
because
like...
even Wilford Brimley says later, it was sort of like a. That was written in just in case you didn't fall for the first one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed
something
that line.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's bananas that they're so, like, he didn't go for it. Activate plan B.
Yeah. Well, because she...
Start the tussle on the beach.
The girl at the little cocktail drinking dancing part, she looks at Gene Hackman and gives him the look when Tom Cruise is walking away. Like, it didn't. He's not, you know, buying
right,
it or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah. So he's not interested with this woman who's actually conversing and having, like, whatever. He's not
right.
interested. He's like, no, I can't.
That
no, thank
makes sense
you.
To me.
Right. Totally. Right. He's not interested in that. Okay. But then helping this woman, she's in distress and she needs to be rescued. And so it goes immediately into they're having sex on the beach. Like, and they're unbuttoning clothes and later, Wilford Brimley, when he shows the photographs, he implies, like, he says all these other things. Like, all these things that your wife, you'd never want her to know. And it's just like, I don't.
He says oral.
I know, right? It's so funny.
Wilford Brimley
and
saying
oral. We have photographs of your oral. why didn't they show those in the movie?
I'm sorry.
These are the
I'm
things.
Very sorry.
Why do they say that, imply that, whatever, and we don't get to see it? That's like during Holly Sleeps Over. I was so annoyed that we weren't even seeing more. But okay, anyway. Wait, I disliked the movie because it was bad all around. But then also, like, at least can you please? Okay. What are you talking about? Okay, so they're doing it on the beach.
Yes.
And it's used. He's set up. He would not have fallen for that. Not even fall. He just wouldn't have done that. So it's so stupid.
Is it a better movie if the photos look bad, but he never actually did anything?
Maybe. But, yeah. I don't know.
But Gene Triplehorn still is like, I've seen the pictures. It looks bad.
Right. Yeah. No. I don't know. Because in the movie, even like at the end when things are coming together and everything's going to be okay, right? Like There are some lines of dialogue exchange.
Her speech to him at the end of the movie makes no goddamn sense.
I know, like, it's just loved a bunch of weird, empty words. You.
Yes. Oh, it's it sounds so profound, right. But it's meaningless.
I know. That's like half the stuff on the internet. it sounds so profound, but it's meaningless. Because she says, I've loved you since before I met you. It's like, what? And then, because she says, the promise of you. And then... I don't know. There are people who probably really are like, oh my God, yes. That's what love is.
Let's incorporate this into our vows. Yes.
Oh, I'd like
to quote from John Grisham and The Firm. Oral. I just, you know, unfortunately, the scene where it comes out that he had cheated, is well acted. It's a good scene between him and Gene Triplehorn. It's probably their best scene in the movie. Because otherwise, her job is... she's given a little bit of agency when she tries to involve herself and goes to the Caymans to sort of seduce Gene Hackman.
Just
and
the
like,
fact that she still works, too. Like, just to back it up for a second.
Right.
Because early
but
on...
so much of
like,
the movie is just... she's just wife.
Yes. Right. Well, she's grading papers in bed one night when he comes home late.
Right. But she's mad at him for coming home late.
Yeah. Well, he was coming home late a lot.
The firm.
The firm was taking up all of his time. And they kept reminding him, it'll just be like this for a while in the beginning. It's the firm.
I just want
this is what the firm does.
Gene Triplehorn to be given more to do.
Right.
Because she's an angel from heaven.
Oh, she is. She has a couple, okay, she has a couple really like sarcastic, dry jokes, like just things that she says to him that are really cute. They kind of inform that their marriage is like fun and that they joke around and they can say things that are jokingly,
right,
you know,
right,
mean or to each other, like they, you know, you sense that they're in love and all that stuff, right? But there is, yeah, I wish she had more to do too in terms of even her personality. Like 3/4 through the movie, I'm just like, has she you're right, like she hasn't done anything else. Like I would love to see her like talk for more than just two lines at a time. I don't,
her function is to like be upset with him,
right?
First,
right,
she's upset with him for working too much, then she's upset with him for cheating on her, rightfully so.
Well,
even though it makes no goddamn sense and yeah, it's just so shoehorned into this movie.
Right. And she's upset with him even just as like things are building and she says like, well, what, you know, I would have been happy. They always make references to like their favorite restaurant,
right,
and back how they were doing things. And she says something at one point like, the last time I smiled or the last time I was happy, the last time I laughed was when we were eating whatever
the
restaurant.
Chinese takeout or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah.
And it did occur to me, I'm like, they have not really let her smile. She has the same, like, right, worried Gene Triplehorn face the whole time. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yes.
I just feel like she was somebody who was always given, was never given enough to do in a movie.
I agree. Is it possible that she didn't have more to
no,
give? No, I know. I know. I know you think that, but I'm just wondering, like,
no,
have we ever seen her be really, like, happy and excited in a movie?
Maybe. I don't know. I never saw Till There Was You, which was like her one shot at that's like a leading role.
Right. That's right.
I think it's the only time she ever really had a lead. It was a romantic comedy with her and Dylan McDermott and
yeah,
Sarah Jessica Parker, but I never saw it.
Why haven't we seen that?
I don't know.
She's so
pretty. It's probably hard to come by now, but
she's so pretty.
We had just watched Very Bad Things the other night and she's in that movie as well, also not given much to do.
I forgot that she was like a main lead in Big Love, which we also loved.
Oh,
back
there we
in the
go.
Day. Yeah,
there.
Big
she was
Love,
given plenty to do,
yes,
on Big Love,
and
was
so
like
good,
the standout of that,
yes,
show.
Yeah, absolutely.
She was absolutely
Paxton too.
No, he was good, yeah, but Gene Triplehorn was the MVP,
mm-hmm,
of that show.
Sure,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I forgot about Big Love,
and of course Waterworld.
Sure. Also Waterworld.
Why do I not remember? We watched Gloria Bell a few months ago, and that's popping up as I...
Is she in that?
It says that she is. I don't remember. See, this is not a good thing. She was in Sliding Doors?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know that I've ever seen all of Sliding Doors.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that going to be your S pick for Shelf Life?
Doubtful.
So
we do own that.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, do we own any of the S's?
We do own
that
Sliding
you...
Doors, but not Steel Magnolias.
Yeah, I feel like Jeannie Triplehorn could have
Jeannie?
Had...
I call her Jean, but
no,
you
it's...
keep saying Jeannie.
Well, it's... she's listed as Jeannie everywhere.
Okay. I always thought it was just Jean.
Really?
Yeah.
She's listed as Jeannie.
Okay.
where I'm looking, at least.
Yeah.
I think I always, I don't know. Now you got me. Now you got me thinking.
Whatever.
Jean or Jeannie.
JT, we'll just call her.
JT. Aw. what's she doing now?
I'm not sure.
Let's call her.
All right.
She's probably home.
She might be.
This should be the time that we try to reach out to some celebrities that we've always really liked.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we have their numbers.
Sure. We could just tweet them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Direct message them. Yeah. They'll love that. Like, listen, we're F this movie. Have you heard of us?
JT,
no?
Okay. A third of our firm podcast is devoted to you.
And we like you so much.
Answer our Skype calls.
We could have a Zoom meeting. Who out there is having Zoom meetings?
What else do you want to say about the firm?
Just that it's very entertaining. It moves. It's fun. It's top.
Is
Tom
it your
Cruise,
favorite Grisham?
I don't know. I would have to revisit.
I've never seen The Client, and I've never seen The Chamber.
And here's the thing: you listed all these movies that are two words and start with the.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like I've seen most of them, but remember hardly.
So this is your favorite, is what you're saying?
I've seen this one so many times.
This is number one.
This has to be. Wait, what was the other one you named though that I love? Like the one that when it's on cable, we
Runaway
leave it
Jury.
On. Yeah.
That's not a good movie, but
Runaway
I love
Jury.
It.
Right? Yeah. No, it's not about. It's
The Firm is technically a better movie.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I can
Thank
recognize.
Thank you. Give it that.
I can recognize
Give it that.
That.
It's The Firm. What else would you want to say about The Firm?
I'm out. I'm
really?
Good. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do you want to say about quarantine life?
Just
lockdown
everybody
life?
Be safe and wash your hands.
Are you enjoying your quarantine?
Well, yeah. I'm lucky to be stuck with you.
Aw. Thanks,
like
Ben.
Huey Lewis says.
Aw.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us for this week. But
happy to be stuck with you.
Thank you for listening. As always, you can go to fthismovie.com to read our stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at fthismovie. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can rate, review, subscribe to the show in iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. You can email us at ifthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Comment on the page just while we're on quarantine. I would love to just say hi to somebody. So all anyone, right. Say hi. Say hi.
Say hi.
Yay.
Thank you guys very much for listening. Thanks, Bew, for doing the show with me. It was fun.
Of course.
To be able to do it in person.
Oh, yeah. I always like to do it in person.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.